Alrighty. Evening, everyone. This is Gordon, W2, Tango, Tango, Tango. And this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. This net is conducted weekly on a frequency of 146.955, the Alpine repeater of the Chestnut, the 2-meter Alpine repeater of the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club. And the PL is 141.3, and the input is minus 600. Are there any stations with emergency or priority traffic? Please call K2BAR. City, that's always a good answer. So this net is about having a conversation about amateur radio, electronics, telecommunications, computers, the underlying science and technology that goes to make it all happen, our user experiences with what we've done, how we've enjoyed things, what frustrated us, what we learned, what we'd like to learn. You can put in aspirational things. You can also talk about things that you're proud of or not so proud of, as the case may be, from your past. Net is open to all radio amateurs who are licensed to operate on 2 meters and is also supported by the K2 Foxtrot Juliet, K2 Foxtrot Juliet dash L, as in Lima, Echolink. Many of us do check in via the Echolink, and there'll be a time for the Echolink folks to be polled. So, before we get too crazy tonight, is there a station on frequency who can help with a little bit of scribing, because I'm still coming home from my son's hockey game? Are there any stations who can take the log of users? I'd appreciate it, just in case. K2BAR, W2TTT.
Here, Conrad Gordon, KD2TTK.
Thank you, Gary. Much obliged. All right. So let's start with you, KD2TTK. What's your pleasure this evening?
Listening and scribing.
Okie dokie. Stations may come in and are encouraged to come in with either questions, comments, or sailor swap, any and all of those. Any combination, or they should say none of the above. Why would you want to check in if you have nothing to say? Because we need to know who's out there so that we can focus the conversation on your needs as we understand them, or we might even ask you for what your needs are, or what your thoughts are. We might remember something that you had said to somebody a while back that you might have forgotten, and we can help bring something to life for you or for others. So, do check in even if you don't think you have anything to contribute. Any other Kilo stations for the net, please call with your call sign, your name, indicate whether you have a question, comment, for sale or swap, any combination of those things, or none of the above, please call K2BAR, W2TTT.
82 EIG, Frank, just listening.
Hi, Frank. Good evening to you, sir. Any other kilos?
KO2OK, Mobile. Bennett here. Just in the car for a few minutes and then home again. KO2OK.
Evening, Bennett. Any other kilos?
Good evening, Gordon. Everybody in net, KC2ZMA mobile right now. No questions or comments.
Very good. Very good, Marco. Welcome aboard. And thank you for volunteering for Sunday. That's awesome. Talk more about that after we talk about the picnic. And any other kilos?
KD2ZXG on the side, no questions.
ATDXC, thank you very much. Welcome aboard as well. Any other kilos? Whiskey stations.
WA2UMP, Jim in Pearl River, just listening.
Shooting Jim, welcome aboard. Any other whiskeys?
WU2S, Randy in Washington Township, just listening.
Okay, WU2S. Very good. Welcome, Randy. Any other whiskeys?
W2JEK, Don, nothing.
Good evening, Donald. Any other whiskeys?
W2LCN in Bloomingdale. No questions or comments right now. Just kind of getting settled in.
Good evening, Rick. Eric, I got to give you a phone call. You're going to laugh. I may have given you the wrong unit. I noticed I have the Pro here, and you have the Duo. I think I made a mistake. Anyway, we'll talk offline. That's pretty funny. I just realized what I had done later. I didn't notice until last night, actually this morning. Anyway, neither here nor there. Any other whiskeys?
W2APP, Paul Harrington Park, none of the above.
Evening, Paul. Welcome aboard. Any other whiskeys?
W2NIW.
Matt, what's your pleasure?
Good evening, everyone. Well, like last time, or two times ago, rather, just listening and seeing what we can put in the memory bank tonight.
I'll give you a question now, and you're going to hold on to it until later. We're going to ask you to comment on what is the reasonable payload of your quadcopter. So, come back to that later. Alrighty, any other whiskeys? Okie dokie, how about November's? Wow, okay, how about Alpha's?
AC2GI, Rich, two questions.
Bless you, my son. Hello, Rich, good evening. AC2GI, very good. Any other alphas? Any later check-ins? Any call sign type?
Kilo Bravo 2, Sierra Quebec, just listening.
V2SQ, what's your name and where are you from, sir?
Name is Paul, I'm on the upper west side of Manhattan.
Oh yes, Paul, we've worked before. You sing a few words, I recognize your beautiful voice. Alrighty, very good. KB2SQ, welcome aboard. Any other stations to check in before we move to Echolink? Alrighty, any stations on the Echolink? I'll make just a quick announcement here, and then we'll go to Rich's question. This Sunday is the Barra, the Barra Picnic. The no radio event, and it's a lot of fun. Look on the Barra website for the details, and maybe Tony, you want to say a few words about it? K2AMI, K2BAR. Okay, maybe not. There's also on Sunday the Ramapo Rally, the 150-mile bike ride that starts at Camp Car Reservation right here in Mahwah. Goes out through Morris County and back. We are looking for radio operators to be at fixed locations and also for SAGs. Really need more operators, and whatever you can offer would be greatly appreciated. And if tomorrow night someone can bring a Biaofeng programming cable, USB programming cable, I would really appreciate it. I had a misplaced and ultimately stolen backpack. I misplaced it and someone picked it up and walked away with it, but in any case, I need to program some Biaofeng HT, so if someone could come tomorrow night with a Biaofeng cable, I would be very, very much in debt. But you'll be fed well, given a t-shirt on Sunday, and it is a long day, even if you start off in the morning, we're going to be in Camp Gaw at 6:45 in the parking lot and basically be ready for a briefing at 7, having checked in with the volunteer staff and the like. It's pretty exciting. And I can explain different roles if people have different interests and needs and blah, 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 blah. Be happy to do that, but we're really excited about the event this year. It's going to be beautiful weather, but very, very good. And I'll have a 205 done later this evening and ready for distribution tomorrow.
We can always revise it by Sunday. So, any questions about the picnic or the Ramapo rally, please call KTBAR.
KD2DDK, your programming cable is already in my pouch for tomorrow.
Oh, bless you, my son. All right, thank you very much. All righty, because I don't know if the one I have works, I'll let you know tonight if I have time. I had to replace two of my three EBL funds. I now have two 5RA pluses, but I feel like a chump, but it's another story for another day. Anyway, anybody else have any questions about the weekend festivities?
WCACP?
Yes, Mr. Paul.
Do you actually need to borrow any bifunk?
Well, I think we're good, but thank you.
No problem.
Well, just FYI, I have a couple of cigarette lighter adapter devices for both the Bialfungs and the Ushans. So I have more for the Bialfungs than I do Ushans, but just want to let people know that if you need to borrow one, I should be able to lend you one for the weekend. I mean, it's only 5 watts, but it certainly will do the trick. For a lot of the course. I mean, there'll be places where you'd just be marginal, but it is something to consider. Alrighty. Any other comments regarding the weekend? Okay, very good. Well, then let's dive into our questions, and then we're going to come, the question I posed to Matt will come after the ones from Rich. So Rich, AC2GI. What's your pleasure? W2TTT, K2BR, W2TTT.
Actually, I just came up with a third question, and I'll do that one first. Are you still selling the green poles?
Yes. Oh, yes. In fact, see Gary if you'd like to get some immediately, or, you know, you can see me as well, but you're welcome to see Gary.
All right, I'll hook up with Gary at some other time. First question deals with PSK or digital modes on 40 meters. I've been sitting listening on the published frequency and I hear nothing. Am I on the wrong one? Does somebody know what frequency has a little bit more active? I am normally sitting at 7.07. Am I in the wrong place?
7071, I thought, isn't it? Or 7070? One of those, yeah, somewhere in there. You got to look up from that frequency, though.
Okay. Yeah, there's, like, never anything on there. Okay, and my next question deals with an antenna project that I'm thinking about, which is a fan dipole. I'm not sure what bands I'm going to want it on, but typically the various copper conductors for each band, I see insulators between them. How far should the conductors be kept apart from each other?
A couple of inches is generally good enough. You get an average, you'll be closer. I mean, people make fan dipoles out of 300 ohm twin leads, so, you know, only two bands, but they do make them. So, you know, you don't have to go crazy, but, you know, whatever is reasonable. A little diversity is a good thing. It reduces capacitive coupling.
And plexiglass okay for the insulators?
Thank you, Jim. It's fine until the UV gets to it, so consider that. K2ZO, go ahead.
Okay, good evening. Just checking in here. This is K2ZO. Yeah, Rich, don't use plexiglass. Use Lexan. It survives the UV while the plexiglass crazes. What happens is as you additional dipoles, especially when you start looking at 15 and 20 and things like that, or 17, you start ending up watching the SWR kind of move up. I'll see if I can find a website that I found, but there's a couple of real good ones on how to make a fan dipole with some numbers in there where people who have actually solved the interaction problem by, you know, noting that, yes, you have to make this one a little bit longer and this one a little bit shorter. But if you do a Google search for fan dipole, I'm sure you'll find it. It was very interesting because I remember scratching my head when I built one and then I tried to put another band on there and I said, oh, the SWR was going crazy on the previous band. And that's what you have to do is anticipate that. And yes, you do have to space them. And this guy had a really good article on how to do that. And I'll see if I can find it for you. I'll Google it and see if I can find it again. But it was excellent.
Okay, I'd appreciate that. And you have my email address. I really would. Thinking about making one of those, taking it up to the Adirondacks in the end of September with me. And that's all I have. Back to net, AC2GI.
So where do you go in the Adirondacks, and what do you do up there at the end of September?
One is I throw my canoe on the car. I don't have a place to store a travel trailer anymore, so I found a company that will actually deliver it to the campground, which is Fish Creek Ponds between Tupper Lake and Saranac Lake. And they deliver it. I live in it. They come and get it. I come home. Do a little fishing, a little canoeing, and that's about it. And sit in front of the fire and watch the leaves turn color.
To your Fish Creek at Rollins Pond?
Yeah, you actually go through Fish Creek to get to Rollins.
I know, I've stayed there. You know, the far end of Rollins is where the Rollins Pond, part of Floodwood Mountain Scout Reservation is, that little peninsula with the little cove in the far end.
I've never stayed at Rollins. I've canoed through there, dropped off at the main put-in, and canoed through Rollins, did the carryover into Floodwood when that first creek was still blocked, and then come all the way down through Copper's Pond and down the creek back into Square Pond.
Done all that too. By the way, you can go from West Pine to Floodwood and around to Rollins. It can be done. You know, wet foot, but I mean, meaning paddling. It depends on how high the water is in the creek. They're very good. That's awesome. Well, congratulations. That'll be fun. Good place to play some ham radio, too. I did that. I would actually use a 40-meter dipole literally across the scrub 4 feet off the ground and work, 1,500 miles, no problem, with an Icon 703 Plus.
Excellent. Okay, back to net, AC2GI.
Did that 3 summers ago. God, that was fun. Yeah, very good, Rich. That sounds great fun. Probably late September is it. I mean, you actually get, frozen mornings. Although I had that happen in August once, but anyway. Water bottle was frozen the first week of August. Not frozen solid, but there was ice in my water bottle. I woke up. All right, very good. What was your other question?
Actually, that was it. PSK frequency on 40 meters, fan dipole, and green poles. I'm done. Back to net.
Outstanding. Okay. Very, very good. All right. So, let's see. Matt, what's your thought on your quadcopter? How big is your quadcopter? And what kind of payload can you handle?
Okay, W2TTT, W2NIW. So that's, I've been trying to figure out the best way to explain everything without taking up too much time. Difficult answer, Gordon. I've been flying fixed wing and rotary wing for some 20 plus years. The quadcopter I bought was one small, very small, so that I could zip around inside the house. And I'd say it's only about a foot on the long side of the X, from X to X, where each engine pod is located. Gordon, I had a rather detailed conversation with Gary, KD2DDK, last night about it, and a phone call between you two fellows probably would be the best. Unfortunately, the outcome of the phone call was not exactly what Gary would probably have wanted to hear. The payload for mine, being so small, would not be to what you would be looking for to carry a Wi-Fi camera, battery pack, and a electronics board to transmit down to your mesh network. The different size of quadcopters, let me drop, are very numerous. You can go to whatever size you want to match the payload you want, and of course that is all what your pocketbook wants to match. So that all those details Gary has, and that phone call between you and he would be very worthwhile. There are many, many things that I told him, talking about the idea of what he was thinking about. I don't know how much he explained to you. I'm not sure if he talked to you about his idea or not, using the aerial view system with the quadcopter. So I can't really give you a size or weight. I don't think mine would hold what you'd want to put airborne, though I do not have any clue as to what size camera, power supply, and electronics board you would need to lift into the air. So I can't tell you exactly if mine would do it. I've never tried to lift anything with mine, though it does have a fair amount of power, but I know it's not enough to do what you would need, Gordon. Back to you.
2 ounces.
2 ounces? Oh, my goodness. 2 ounces? Okay, well, mine will lift 2 ounces for sure. And now, the different subject, or to explain it properly, it'll lift 2 ounces, but it would not be the exact platform you would be looking for. And there are various reasons for that. To get a stable picture is one thing. Just a quick idea of what you're looking for. There are many quadcopters, very reasonably priced. I gave Gary a website with something that he could forward to you. A rather cheap quadcopter that has GPS, heading hold, altitude hold, would be more or less what you would be looking for. And that goes all the way up to thousands of dollars in the RC hobby world, believe it or not. But all the way down to $350 or so for a unit like that, which would be really adaptable to what you would want to do. The 2 ounces is quite amazing that you'd fit your package into everything that small. Mine would lift it, but there again, you would not have the stability, and you may not get the best smooth picture that you'd be looking for.
Well, we've been looking at pies. There are other platforms that are yet smaller, and don't need a lot of RF. You put a lot of gain on the ground to track the thing, you know? That's interesting. By the way, I'm trying something new. Nutty Caramel Swirl from Ben & Jerry's. Highly recommended, gentlemen. Just want to let you know. It's a full-service benefit of the TechNet. You get to find out what ice cream Gordon is eating this week, and it's Nutty Caramel Swirl from Ben & Jerry's. Highly recommended. Never had it before. Anyway, so, all right, very good. The other thing we're thinking about is something like a dirigible, you know, basically a steerable balloon, because then you get lift without a lot of the complications.
You get lift without a lot of the complications, but you're going to have a lot of buffeting, and you're going to have motors again to try to keep a position held. These are just more little things you have to weigh out. You have to write everything down on paper, all these different things that you're going to be looking at to come up with your best ideas.
Yep. I mean, guys,
free space balloon, send them to the edge of the atmosphere, and then have them fall to Earth. Our goals are a little more modest. You know, we might be able to cut the engines and just float around and just look at stuff, you know. That might be fine, too. You know, the station keeping may not be the ultimate goal here.
Well, you also might want to think about a dirigible or a helium-filled device with a wire on it, two wires preferably, something that is long enough in size so that two wires down to the ground to a reel system so that you could reel it up and down, and two wires so that you can give it some sort of position hold. Of course, one wire, you're liable to get a spinning effect on it, which is not what you'd ideally be wanting if you were trying to, say, look at a certain, for example, a parade traveling down a main thoroughfare in town. Spinning around, that's not going to be what you'd want. So a dirigible in length long enough with two wires, one on each end, and unreel it to the altitude you want, that would give you some sort of a heading hold. So there's so many things you can come up with. I mean, the possibilities, if you think about it, are just limitless. You'd have to really put your mind to it and start looking at what's out there. Like I said, I had a long conversation with Gary last night about it. So it'd be nice if you guys got together on it.
We can do that. Anybody else have any questions on this topic? Station Go.
This is W2LCN. I guess I had a question and a comment. I wanted to know what the name of the website was there was the gentleman was referring to that had the quadcopters listed. I'm just curious. And the second comment was, I just did some research a couple of weeks ago about these balloons, and I came across a site run, I think it was by the Navy, they had done some testing, and they gave an 18-inch Mylar balloon, they gave its payload, its effective lift, they gave all the specs, very well tested, and I'll try and get that information and forward it over to you. Back to next.
Excellent. Yeah, we could do that. That would be really, really good. All righty. Anybody else?
Site, Gordon?
Not the site.
Okay, I think you said let's have the site. To the gentleman, that would be Horizon Hobby, HorizonHobby.com. And go under all the different topics. They'll have things listed as helis, airplanes, radios, power plants and such, and you'll find your quadcopters. And also, if you go onto YouTube and do a YouTube search under quadcopter, you'll come up with everything you could imagine, including what I flew this past weekend, which was a very large quadcopter that had a camera mounted to it, and down at the position where you're flying from, you have a pair of goggles on, sort of a heads-up display, and you fly it just with the goggles. They're video goggles with every piece of information from GPS to battery power, altitudes, headings, everything you could think of in those goggles. Very interesting. So do that YouTube search under quadcopter, and for everybody who's into radio control stuff, you'll all be amazed at what's out there. Back to you, Gordon.
Very interesting. It was really interesting. All right, what's the name of that website one more time?
It's HorizonHobby, HorizonHobby.com.
Sure. No problem. Thank you very much, Horizon.com. Alrighty. Anybody else?
W2RN, second in.
K2RAN?
Negative. W2REN. That's Whiskey 2, Romeo, Echo, November.
Good evening, W2REN, W2TTT, K2B Eric, W2TTT, very good. Alrighty, very good. Let's see,
can I do you for, sir?
I don't know what was going on, but I just happened to come through here, and I wanted to check in on your net. But I'm not into the RFCs myself. I'm more of an antenna builder. So, as a matter of fact, I just got done doing a bunch of beams for our club. We'll probably have them on display at our meeting on the 20th up in Mount Arlington.
Okay. Very good. That's interesting. What kind of beams are they?
Mostly Yagis, a few Moxon, directional finding, and 440s, some 220s, 2 meter 220, 440, all different kinds, maybe about 4 or 5 different aspects of different bands.
Okay. Nice. I'd like to hear about more of that ourselves here one night. Maybe you can come in with a slightly better signal and tell us about it. We'd like to hear more. Okay?
No problem. I don't just make beams. I make other things, too. I make J-poles, which I'm using right now, indoors. Copper cactus J-pole pole indoors. And I'm coming to you from Sukasana.
Just out of curiosity, are you the fellow who was at the Den Ellen Hamfest a month or two ago who sold a black J-pole to me? It was great, by the way.
Was that again a black J-pole?
Yeah, did you sell me one at a Hamfest? It works great.
I have built those, but mine wasn't black. Mine was, actually, I know the person that sold those black ones. That was something that he didn't want to copy my design, so he made it black.
Okay, very good. All righty. Well, thank you very much.
That way I can't get them for infringement rights or copyright.
Okay, very good. Alrighty, anybody else have anything for the net tonight?
KD2EIG?
KD2EIG. Go ahead, Frank.
Go connected, N2OEL, connected, N2OEL.
KC2QIN?
Hi, Peter, and I think we have Noel in there, too, so QIM, go first.
Yeah, good evening to everybody in the net. This is KC2QIM, Peter in Tenafly, New Jersey. I have a quick question, Gordon. How do you know a 4-to-1 Balaam is no longer good? And here's my dilemma. I use an off-center fit dipole from 40 meters and up, and occasionally, most of the time, on some of the bands, I don't have to even tune it because the SWR is good. Last week or so, I noticed that I have to retune the antenna. I also found, compared to my wire antenna on the same radio, that the antenna is not listening the same way as it used to. And the wire antenna should not perform as well as the off-center fit dipole on the higher bands. So I've also put a MFJ antenna analyzer on and found at various spots in the various bands I have absolutely no nulls to get anything near a decent SWR. And I checked the meter out on other antenna that I have, and it finds the null with no problem. So how do you know that? And I just made a contact with a guy in Dominican Republic on 20 meters and got a 20 over S9 copy. How do you know your Balaam is sort of like not working properly or not doing its job? Obviously, it's conducting a signal, but it doesn't seem to be doing the thing it's supposed to do as far as the SWR is concerned. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I got a lot of thoughts. How do you know it's not some other component in the antenna? The solder connections of the wire that you're using, the coax that you're using to feed it, come to mind. I mean, you know, there's all sorts of fun opportunities for mayhem, right?
You're absolutely right. I'm thinking of those as well. But I'm just wondering if there's any way to test the balun. I guess you have to put the an ohmmeter on it, right? And put a load on it at the other side. How would I do that with I have a multimeter. How can I actually test the ability of the balun to give me the right load?
Okay, since you're saying you have a receiver problem as well as a transmit, the first thing I would do is I'd drop it down, replace it with a nearly identical known good piece of coax, and see if the problem goes away. That's what I would do first. While you're doing that, inspect the feed point into the balun, inspect the balun to your best ability unless the damn thing's potted, and inspect the solder connections to the wire itself. I would do that.
Okay, and that makes logical sense to me, and that's what I'm planning to do either this week or the next, and I'll give you a report. But I thought maybe there was a... Well, actually, it's very important. I'm going to disconnect the coax and then connect the jumper into the bottom of the balun with the antenna analyzer and see if it tunes differently. And I'll go from there. All right. That's all I had. It was just on my mind. It looks like it's a little project that it's going to... it's challenging to get it done. I'm sure it's not rocket science, but I'll find the culprit somewhere in the chain. Well, back to you. This is KC2QYM. That's all I have tonight, Gordon.
K2ZO, I have a question for you about this. Is the length of the feed line materially important on a 4-to-1 balun fed OCF wire?
Okay, K2BAR. That's K2ZO. The length of the feed line... If the balun is presenting a 50 ohm load to the coax, the length of the feed line doesn't really mean anything. However, if the SWR on the feed line is other than a 1-to-1, you'll see changes. And Peter said everything was working beforehand. I don't know, Peter, how much power have you run through that thing?
Well, the balun itself is rated for a kilowatt, and I've run my SB200 about 500, 550 peak at times.
Okay, well, I did a post-mortem on one that had some very weird characteristics. It was a Radio Works balun, and it had two toroids. It was a 4-to-1 balun, two toroids. They're actually in parallel in the bottom, and it's Sirius in the top, which makes it 4-to-1 transformation. And when putting low power through it and looking at the SWR, everything was fine. And as you brought the power up, you could see the SWR kind of go crazy. So we checked out the coax, we checked out everything, see everything was okay. Finally, we got the hacksaw and cut the balun open. And this was a used balun that we had purchased, that someone had purchased from somebody else. And when we looked at that, we found that one of the cores was cracked. Okay, so that was the indication. But you should be able to, if you take the balun down, or just put a 200, if it's a 4-to-1, put a 200 ohm resistor across it, just a non, you know, carbon resistor, and put your analyzer on it and see if you see 50 ohms. If you don't, well, then that's a problem. Of course, the other way is if you have two balun, two 4-to-1s, you come out with your 50 ohm, come to the other one, put the other balun back to back, and come back to 50 ohms, and see how it works. That's the ultimate test. But I don't know, with the power you're running, I wouldn't think you've popped it at all. You know, but you never could tell. But you know, if you were running 2,000-3,000 watts, so yeah, you may have fried something. But if it's changed, I would, as Gordon says, I would check first all of the coax and everything else first, and make sure that nothing else has changed there, and then see what the balun does. But it's always fun to kind of troubleshoot things like that.
But one of the things that will be a dead giveaway is the fact that if you raise the power and you watch the SWR, and usually any of these things, even though they may be damaged, will work fine at low power. And once you bring the power up, you'll see the SWR run up. So that'll be a good test for you before you do anything else. This is K2ZO. Back to that.
Comment.
Go right ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. Yeah, I saw that actually with the linear. I saw that without the linear in bypass mode, everything was fine. And when the linear came up, I had weird SWR reactions when I was running power through it.
Now, well, of course, could be something else, but when you see that, the ballon is suspect.
Thanks for your thoughts. I've taken everything under advisement, and we'll report back as I troubleshoot. I have the advantage of KC2RDW is going to lend me one of his 4-to-1 ballon spares, which will probably end up to be a permanent lend. And we may just fix it that way, but I still want to see inside the ballon if that's the problem. But I'll test and do all those things. Thank you so much, KC2QYM.
Very good, Peter. Very, very fine. Thank you very much, KC2QYM, K2BAR. Anybody, oh, well, N2OL, what's your pleasure, my friend? K2BAR.
N2OEL, timeout. N2OEL, timeout. N2OEL, timeout.
N2OEL, K2BAR, you want to try it again? Okie dokie, alright. Alright, what else do we have on tap here for tonight? Anybody else have any questions or comments?
W2APP?
W2APP, go ahead, Paul.
I just wanted to comment on the RF and the helicopters. Yeah, it's a fascinating subject that I sort of looked around. Some of the ones that you have today, you know, like, they're absolutely stunning. I think Harvard came out with, like, their version of the Microbee, which is, like, literally, you know, the size of a penny that will float around and take pictures. I think in the UK, the Army just released one that'll sit in the palm of your hand that'll run for like 30 minutes and travel probably about a mile and a half away, which is really disposable for those guys. Lots and lots of stuff out there, and an absolutely fascinating subject.
Yeah, absolutely. Part of the deal is that if you're getting real-time pictures back, that's really handy. Some of them, however, have just gone on recon missions, and they basically take a time-hacked video recording, don't emit anything. They just buzz along, record what they record, come back to base, you download the content in the comfort of the base, and you see what was there. It's good for what are called static recon, and it's a lot more stealthy because there's no emissions from the device, just to the device.
WJAPP?
Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, I just want to last comment on that, which is if you're thinking of deploying that in the sort of the mesh net sort of multi-mode way, I think the balance has to be struck between the actual size of it, which is going to be subject to winds and, like you say, a lot of buffeting, but also, you know, if it gets too big and you've got a crowd in there, if it decides to flip or whatever and land into the crowd, how much damage that's actually going to do. W2APP, back to that.
Absolutely right. Well, another thought was, forget putting a camera in the platform, and if it's a balloon or if it's a, you know, quadcopter or something else in the way of an aerial vehicle, just have it be a mesh node that, you know, heads up and extends the network into places you otherwise could not reach. I think there's a lot of value in that potential as well, even if it's for, you know, a nominal duration.
Anybody else?
K2VAR W2LCS.
Go ahead, Rick.
I'm just taking a look at the one web page I found, and they have, it looks like, a camera set up with the 2.4 gigahertz wireless camera, and they're extending a range of an 18-inch disc pushes it out 4 miles, but it looks like a standard antenna can pick it up at 1,000 feet away, so it looks like something that someone's done inadvertently many years ago, not for the mesh network, but it can definitely apply, and it looks like there's a lot of information on this, this group of pages. It's definitely pretty old, but it's from the Naval Academy balloon mission. But I sent that over to you. Take a look, but there's a lot of good resources down on the bottom, and it's at www.aprs.org/balloons.html.
I'll take a look at that. That's pretty cool. Alrighty. Anybody else have comments?
Yeah, Mr. K.
Good evening, James.
Another possible suggestion. The helicopter and the dirigible might work well, real well if in relatively still air, but if you have some more breeze, not tremendous, but enough breeze, you could conceivably use a stunt kite. And if you run equal lines, it'll pretty much go straight up, or you can steer it, you know, around on the arc if you so wished. But if you didn't have to go anywhere, you just wanted an elevated position, that might work.
I think we wanted something a little less needy of attention than a stunt kite, you know? But it's certainly a possibility. I mean, you know, for some people that might be efficient. You remember, network convergence takes time too, so you don't want to spend all the time in the air getting network convergence and not getting, you know, network connectivity out of it, you know?
Well, if you run it in a static mode like I'm talking, once you get it up, as long as the wind stays reasonably steady, it'll stay in a single spot for a considerable amount of time.
Oh, okay. I wasn't aware of that. That's very interesting. Alrighty. Anybody else have thoughts on this? It's very interesting. Learn something every day. Alrighty. Let's see. What else? Anybody else have anything they want to add to the net tonight?
Yeah, Mr. Kent.
Absolutely, Mr. Jackson.
Okay. Now to start an argument here. relative merit of a fan dipole versus an offset fed. Obviously, they both have limitations and both have certain advantages. I'm wondering if anybody has an opinion on the comparison.
I'm going to speculate. Based on the fact that a regular dipole is like within a dB or two of a regular, of an OCF, and generally a dB or two better than OCF. And given that the interactions will probably cause some modest loss, reminiscent of what you might get of an OCF, maybe a fraction of a dB to a dB, maybe more, but, you know, minimally. And the complications of a fan dipole, I'm assuming you're talking about a halfway fan dipole, at whatever base frequency you're playing with. My honest opinion is, just for your sanity, the fan dipole would probably be more of an annoyance to put up. Having put one up recently, it was kind of like each wire was independently strung. We did a four-wire fan. A four-wire? Three-wire, yeah, four-wire fan dipole. Did 80, 40, 20, and 10. And spanned four sets of wires for a friend of mine out in California. It worked out very, very well. But it was a nuisance to run, primarily the way his lot was. But I would think that that would be more of an annoyance, but and for only nominal improvement. over that of an OCS. However, for simplicity, meaning you don't have to have a fancy balun, you don't have to do a lot of other mishigas, you just do, just coil up some coax, make yourself a one-to-one balun out of coiled coax, and you're done. I would think that the fan dipole wins on, shall we say, cost-effectiveness overall, assuming that copper is not the driver and that the balun is a big price item. So, having said all that, let's see what K2ZO says, K2BAR. I would still use the OCF, by the way.
Okay, K2BAR, this is K2ZO. Well, the fan dipole does work. It's a lot of work to get it up and going with all of the pieces. My favorite antenna, which of course is something we've used at Portable Day and on Field Day, is a 300 ohm, again, it's because it's close to the feed point impedance, a 300 ohm fed, a 300 ohm feed line fed, off-center fed dipole. If you're going to go out during a day and you're not really not going to use 80 meters, a 40 meter one works fine. The one we used on Portable Day ran down to the and over to the antenna tuner. I had a 4-to-1 balun down the bottom and into the automatic antenna tuner, and we could match every band from 6 to 40 without any problem at all, and we got out fine. It's a very light antenna. That's what's nice about it, because it's just got the open wire line hung off of it. No big heavy balun or anything like that. Put the balun on the ground. And low loss, you don't really care about the SWR because the loss is so low on open wire line. And it'll work everywhere. Back to Ned.
Well, there's your answer. Anybody else have an answer or a thought? Mr. Don.
Remember my father was struggling with a, I think he had a 40 and 80, 40 and a 20 or a 40 and 80, I forget just what it was, inverted. They touched one thing and the other was out. I guess you can, once you got it up and running, you'll probably be all right, but took a lot of doing to get it up and running for that particular location. You move it to another location, you might have to do it all over again, you know, so it's not a, it's a lot easier to put the off-center fed up and then use the disinfect on the ground with your tuner and make it work. That way, same with the, any of these things that has a tuner, you can overcome all the problems on the ground. You're not climbing up on the roof to add it 2 inches here and climbing the cherry tree at the other end to add 2 inches there. It's all done from the ground. Now back to that.
Okay, so your vote is for the OCF. Just because of sanity. Yeah, I think, you know, I mean, it's not hard to build a 4-to-1 balun. It's just something that most people don't get to do very often and kind of befuddles people, so they tend to buy them, and then when you do that, it drives the cost up. But copper can be a cost, extra insulators can be a cost, not getting the results you want can be making you wonder why you didn't spend the money, you know, the whole thing. So, good point. All right, anybody else?
I just sent you a file on a fan dipole, and I sent it to Rich at ac2gi@arrl.net. I don't know if Rich is at that. Do you have an ARRL address?
Yes, Jim, that's good.
Okay.
Very good. Anything else on this topic?
Sounds good. And thank you, NS2K.
All right, Jim. My only question to you is, in your new place, how tall are the antenna supports going to be? There's virtually no real trees on your lot.
Yeah, no real trees for sure. The only tree at all is this wimpy willow thing that you wouldn't be able to support much of anything on. So, yeah, everything has to be some kind of an artificial tree. Theoretically, there's a height limit but I got a kick out of the discussion that I had with the couple that live diagonally opposite me, and they basically said that part of the reason why they moved there is they didn't like to have other people tell them what they could and couldn't do.
Yeah, those are 10-acre lots, right?
Oh, yeah.
Wise answer. I hear you. So as long as you don't put up a 140-foot parabola, they're probably okay.
Well, I wouldn't put up anything like that anyway, because there is a glider airport nearby. It's only a couple of miles, so I wouldn't want to risk injury there.
Oh, does this mean that the 60-foot towers or 70-foot towers are out of the question?
I wouldn't go quite that far. I might, if I were going to put anything that tall, I would make it so that I could retract it when not in use.
Okay. Very good. Very, very good. I was in Lyle last week of my son's hockey tournament in Illinois. And we were going down a street, and someone had an exceptionally sturdy tower, a steel tower, I forget which one it is, but it was nested and it was automated crank up, and all it had on it was a VHF stack, and a beautiful VHF stack, 6 to 220 or 40, and maybe 1296. It was really, really pretty. I said, wow. I mean, it was down to about maybe 30 feet, cranked down, and you could see that it was one of those deals that's going to be like 70 or 90 feet in the air when it's all said and done. Very nice. I didn't have a chance to look up who it was, but I remember the cross street, and I'll find the real street it's on, the next street over, and when I do that, I'll then cross-reference it to the FCC database. I'll figure it out. But very, very nice stack. I'm at a point, though, where I think I either want the antennas to come down to me or have, low maintenance but rigid supports without a lot of Michigas. I don't want to deal with guys, and I don't want to deal with crank-ups. Those two things bother me a little bit. I wouldn't mind a hazer of some sort, though, I must confess. So I think about that. Some sort of guide hazer array or bracketed hazer array would be kind of neat in a future lot. But, again, how do you keep it? How do you do that unguided? It's very, very tricky. The hazer stuff is a lot easier because you can bring down the whole array down to, let's say, inside of 20 feet on a mast alongside your tower. Anyway, anybody else have comments or questions?
Okay.
Don?
This is in regard to the half-size G5RV. I was wondering if anybody had any experience. I know, so I was looking on my QRP site. I know some of the people that are in there were using the half-size G5RV, and I'm just wondering how, I think like on 20 and 40 meters, but I'm wondering if how they are on the other bands, let's say 30 meters, 17, 15, 10 meters, and things like that. I wonder if anybody's had any actual experience with one of those half-size G5RVs, but G5RV, the big one is a two-footer, it's full-size one, I guess you call it, is the popular. I know they make a double-size one that's even bigger, I think 160, but the one I'm talking about is the one that's about 51 foot overall that I connect.
I had one of those, and I wasn't impressed with it, and I love my OCF that's half-size, my 40-meter OCF versus my 40-meter G5RV. I just, the G5RV just, I don't know. It just doesn't do it for me. That's why I've been so attached to Jim's suggestion of some variant on the OCF. Jim, you want to talk about it a little bit? they may have had to go. I just think that it performs better than the G5RV. At whatever comparable dimension it would